It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy. So glad you're here. Today, we have a really cool guest, Chris Miles. He's the cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor, and he's a leading authority on teaching entrepreneurs and professionals how to get their money working for them today. He's used his knowledge to become financially independent, where his financial income exceeded his expenses. That's what financial independence means. And he's paid off his $1 million in debt after the last recession without filing bankruptcy. He's doing some cool stuff. And, without further ado, let's welcome Chris Miles.
Hey, so excited to be here, Mark.
Yeah, glad to have you. So tell us a little bit about what you do, what you're all about.
Yeah, you mentioned I was like the anti-financial advisor, right? Which
yeah.
Is always a fun term, moniker that people give me. Kind of give you a backstory a little bit. I was raised by middle-class parents, taught me good values of work hard, your word is your bond, those kind of things. Yeah. But when it came to money, they were horrible. I mean, other than my dad, who was really big on, scrimp and save, be cheap, save everything you can, and somehow you'll, have some happiness in life, right? My mom was a starving artist. So the one thing is money was always seemed to be in short supply. There's never enough of it. I'd hear terms like, hey, we can't afford this. What do you think I am, made of money? Money doesn't grow on trees, all that kind of stuff you hear. Maybe you've heard it too, but I was raised with that. And of course, the one thing that really affected me was my dad, because he worked his tail off. The stress from his job, he thought that work would literally kill him before he had a chance to retire. I remember him telling me that, even you didn't have to tell me anything, just the fact he had strokes in his 40s was pretty bad evidence enough. So I vowed I never wanted to be like that. I wanted more freedom, control of my own destiny and my time and my money. And so as I went to college, I realized I probably should have some business experience if I'm going to become a business consultant. That was going to be my original path. Well, the first business that came up that kind of intrigued me was actually being a financial advisor. Because, I didn't know it was so easy to get in. You just had to pass a test of 70% and not have a criminal record, and you could become a financial advisor, right? It's that easy. And so I did it. And I actually stayed, dropped out of college, never went back. Loved being an entrepreneur. I was 100% commission only on that, in that business. But after several years, then my dad reached out to me and said, when are you going to advise me on my money? And I never thought he would say that, because one, he changed my diapers. Two, he was always very guarded. He never wanted us kids to know how much money he had, because he was always afraid that everybody wanted to take his money, right? So anyways, long story short, I sit down with him. And as I look at his finances, he says, Chris, I'm 61. I want to retire now. This is right after Y2K. And I looked at his finances. I said, Dad, I'll be honest. If you want to retire right now, you better hope you die in 5 years, because that's how much money you're going to have. That's pretty much how fast you're going to burn through your money. Okay, Chris. Any other solutions? I said, I don't know. You did everything right, according to traditional financial advice. You paid off all your debt, including your house, in 18 years. You stuffed your money in your 401ks, but yet it just wasn't enough saving those crappy little Fidelity mutual funds, right? And so he's like, well, what else can I do? I said, I don't know, because if I put you in something, I can't guarantee I'm going to get you anything better. And it bugged me, because he was kind of the inspiration for me getting in, yet he was really the poster child for like the perfect saver, like the perfect Dave Ramsey advocate, right? Even though he was before Dave Ramsey's time. And then looking at what's happened is like, you're not going to make it. And then it was an interesting discussion, because then I had a discussion with a friend that I hired to be a financial advisor, but then left to go do something crazy called real estate investing. And I called him up hoping that maybe he was going broke in real estate investing, wanted to come back to work for me as a financial advisor. Found out it was the opposite. He said, Chris, we're making money left and right now. My dad's doubled his income as a professor at the local university. We're just doing awesome with our real estate business. And I was like, oh, come on, that's too good to be true. There's no way that works. And he finally just asked me, dead right between the eyes. He said, Chris, how many of your clients are truly financially free where they don't worry about money? And as I thought about it, I thought about even like the retired physicians and stuff. And even they were sitting around hoping, watching CNN, which is not a good thing ever to do, because you'll always freak out. The sky is always falling. But they're watching CNN, hoping that the market's going to go up so that they don't lose money. Even the ones that weren't in the market, that they took out of the market, they were still worried about running out of money. And then I said, none of them are really free. Okay, Chris, great job. Well, how about this? How many of you guys as financial advisors are financially free, not off the commissions you're earning, but actually doing these investments you've been recommending? As I really was honest about it, looking at my own life and about 100 other guys in our office, I said, probably none, because there's guys been working here since the late 1970s and they're still broke. So maybe it's not working. And he said, well, there's your problem. And it kind of got me going down this different path. And when I realized that alternative investments, I know you talk a lot about that and you do that with your clients too. A lot of the alternative investments, there's a whole another world. It's not about accumulating money. It's about accelerating the money. How do you get that money to actually pay you income? And that completely changed my life around. And to this day, you know, actually I quit being a financial advisor in 2006, said, I can't teach this stuff again. I'll never teach about money. I'll just teach ballroom dancing and be a mortgage broker, which I did for a bit. But then later that year, I was actually able to become financially independent, was able to retire when I was 28 years old. And that's where eventually I had to ask myself what I'm going to do with my life. And I wanted to have more meaning. And that's where I kind of came out of retirement to teach people how to do what I did.
That's amazing. So a couple of questions I want to ask on that. First of all, yeah. I have a statement, and that is you'll never save your way to retirement. And your dad was a pretty good example yes. of that, right? People think, oh, I'll just keep saving. And nobody saves anyway. But you know, our parents kind of got the shaft. Like they thought they would work really hard and put money into bonds and make 8 to 10% a year, and you can live off that and then give some to their kids. Well, when they retired, it was 1 and 2 and 3%. So that's not enough to live on. So they had to go, you know, put money into risky investments. And we know what happened to the big crashes Absolutely. That we've had in the last 20 years. So that's the first concept is you'll never save your way to investments. But I want to know what happened with the real estate guy. Like, did that work out really well? And like everybody was happy at the end, or was there a dot-com or a real estate crash that took everybody down that tube too? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, 2008 wasn't friendly, right? Well, really 2007, right. We started to feel it first. He's actually, I don't think he ever got back into real estate after a while. He made some good money, but he was mainly doing flips. And I was trying to do it for cash flow, but I started trying to go down that same path. And then 2007, I came out of retirement. I was teaching with started a business with a guy named Garrett Gunderson. Have you ever heard of a book called Killing Sacred sure. Cows? You know, we started a company together, and the problem was that we were all focused on flippers too. So our entire market, everything we did when we started a brand new business, we're just getting launched. They're all going broke. Our business starts going broke. Personally, I started going broke because Garrett convinced me that I should cut off streams of income. The very thing that got me to do what we preached, he says, cut those off and just focus on our company at that time called Freedom Fast Track. And dumbest decision I ever made, because I cut off my streams of income. I started burning through cash. And then the next thing you know, savings is gone. I'm running up credit cards and whatever debt I have. And then I'm over $1 million in debt by about 2008, 2009. And I had to dig out of that hole. I didn't file for bankruptcy, but man, it would have been so much easier if I did. But I'm too staying stubborn. And so I stopped teaching people how to get out of the rat race, started teaching them how to find and free up cash flow, right? How to find cash, because that was the big problem back in the last recession. People were like, cash flow or passive income is great, but if I can just have extra cash every month, that would be amazing. So I started going that route instead, and actually helped pull our business almost out of bankruptcy. We were almost completely flat broke, pulled it out. The next year in 2010, we did like $6 million in sales, and it grew from there. And eventually a few years later, I launched Money Ripples and did my own thing. And and I had to do it a second time. I had to get out of the rat race twice. I did that by the end of 2016, and I'll tell you, I learned a lot.
What'd you learn?
You can definitely win in the real estate game, but it's much easier if you really just take a more conservative approach to it. Never pretend like it's always going to go up, but focus again only on cash flow. That's the one mistake I made is I was doing real estate, hoping at banking on appreciation. But if the market goes down, you're hosed, especially if it doesn't pay for itself. It's not profitable. So I now go for profitable real estate investments. I'm now all passive. I don't do any active flipping or wholesaling, nothing like that. I purely just take my money, give it to other real estate investors. Either I lend it to them and get a contractual return, or I put it in different funds, you know, things like that they're managing, and I get paid that way.
Got it. Well, you said something at the top of the call about, you know, you don't like financial advisors and the typical financial advice that we get. And then you mentioned David Ramsey, who's good for some people, let's just say, but is not really good mainstream financial advice if you want to get wealthy. He's probably good for not going broke, but, you know, playing defense, but really not so good on playing offense. So what are some of those things that we hear about that are bad advice that we shouldn't listen to? What do you think? Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Yeah, everybody says like, well, you know, financial advisors are doing a 401k. That's better than nothing. I'm like, well, so is eating candy, but it doesn't mean you can live, you know, like it's just not the same. And you know, the biggest thing is, like you said, like they're great for entry level, almost like remedial math. Remember that in college, there was the remedial math class to catch you up to get to college level. Then you could take your college classes. It's like that with money, right? Like Dave Ramsey's teaching remedial money stuff. So the budgeting stuff he's teaching is great. You know, even consumer debt and things like that is good. But when it comes to wealth building, and this is true even of the traditional salesman in a suit, AKA financial advisor, right? Like those typical guys where they're really just peddling products. They're not financial experts. They're really just have a license to sell, not a license to create money. Yeah, they're really just, they sell you mutual funds and insurances if they have those licenses, and that's it. Even if they know something's better, they can't even offer it if they have a securities license, right? And you know this because you've known this world, but that's the problem. So it's everything to them, everything is you know, a nail because they're a hammer, right? And the same thing with Dave Ramsey. I mean, tries to go so extreme to the person that's supposed to be like the spendaholic. But what I find is most people that have a spending problem don't listen to Dave Ramsey because they don't like feeling ashamed. So that's it's the savers that already do what Dave Ramsey teaches that listens to Dave Ramsey. But he doesn't do a good job creating wealth. If you really look at what he does to create wealth, real estate and business. Business being his number one investment, right? He makes hundreds of millions of dollars in that Financial Peace University, you know, his Financial Peace companies. But real estate, he owns $600 million of real estate. But you don't hear him telling people, hey, you should go buy real estate. No. He says, put your money in the stock market because you make 12%, which is bull. Because the S&P 500, you look at the actual yield of it, it's 7.73% for the last 30 years. That's the average. And most mutual funds don't even keep up with that 7.73%, right? So,
they gotta get paid.
And they can barely get 7% if you're lucky. And even worse than 401ks, I was looking at the performance of Fidelity's, you know, their retirement target date funds. And, you know, the last 10 years, the market actually did a real 10.1% average in 10 years. But it did 8% flat, almost every one of those retirement accounts. So it's 2% worse performance. And it has a 0.75% fee, right? Not including any other fees, just for that funds fee. So really,
but they're diversified.
Right. That's another myth, right? Diversified, right? There's some truth to that, but there's a half truth there because most people.
Hey, look, I don't see Warren Buffett looking through the mutual fund pages and trying to figure out what mutual fund to go into. So, Warren Buffett concentrates very heavily. So why don't we invest like Warren Buffett? He's got like 80% of his money in Apple. You know, he doesn't have Fidelity's funds and all the Vanguard stuff.
That's another myth right there, right? Like so many people, you know, the argument they'll have against me, because they'll say, well, mutual funds are great. Look at Warren Buffett. I was like, Warren Buffett never buys mutual funds.
Warren
Buffett and buys companies. He buys ownership controlling interest in companies. He's a business owner and investor, not a stock trader. That's more close to, well, George Soros is even a stock trader. He's commodities, right? Or not commodities, he's Forex more. You look at those guys, like they're not even doing the things that you're recommended to do by financial advisors and Dave Ramsey, right? So again, that's why everybody falls short. Even like the whole debt-free thing. Now, I'm not all about someone just going La Vida Loca and blowing money on debt. But there are proper ways to use debt if you're a wise steward of your money, if you know what to do with it and you're not putting it in high risk places. But, you know, when someone says, no, all debt's evil, well, that's where you know this person's selling you crap, right? Like I don't think there's any situation. Even I hate 401ks, right? Like I'm a big proponent against most 401ks, but there's always that 1 or 2% time I'll say, this makes sense for you. Like this would be awesome.
Yeah. So let's talk about passive income, because I have this theory lately that there really is no passive income. There's always, you've always got to keep the ball rolling somehow, right? Whether it's managing the manager or managing it yourself, but God, it's so hard to find something that's just purely passive where you just get income coming in. So let's talk about that concept, because I just haven't been able to find it, especially lately. I'm like, I'm looking under rocks and I'm like, I don't know if there is any passive income. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm getting sick and tired of all the marketing that people do with passive income. And granted, our company markets passive income, but we really believe in true passive income, not like, hey, let's start a brand new real estate business, wholesaling and flipping properties, which is anything but passive. Or Amazon dropship business, that's passive. No, it's not. In fact, most people are failing in those businesses right now, right? So I totally agree. And even like I talk about a more passive investment than the traditional one for like buying rentals is like turnkey rentals, where you have a turnkey company helping you find the property. You still have to go and buy it. If you buy it with a mortgage, that's probably the hardest work you do, is having to deal with banks. And then after you buy it, they property manage it and you manage the property manager. So there I would call it semi-passive.
That's what I call it. Yep.
Definitely, if you owned a property in your backyard and you're managing it, you're not a passive investor at all. Although the accountant will say it's passive income on your tax return, it's not passive. And I agree with you this way. I don't think anything's 100% passive in the sense that you can just, quote unquote, as you hear all the time, set it and forget it, right?
Right.
That's what financial advisors teach you to do so that you won't whine and complain when you lose money with them, right?
And pull your money out, right? That's just part of the game.
Don't pull your money out, because that's when they lose commissions. You know, that's how they get paid, is assets under management there. And and again, I don't mind people having assets under management and making money that way, in as much as they're actually performance-based, you know, like not the typical financial advisor that sells you a mutual fund that they don't even manage themselves. They're really just brokering, right?
Yeah.
So it's different. But the set it, forget it thing, you really can't do that even with quote unquote passive investments. Now, granted, like I mentioned, some investments I do, like lending money to different investors and letting them pay me a return of 10 to 15%. Yeah, I'll do that. And there still is that I got to email and follow up, say, hey, things good? Are we still good to go? Like there's still going to be an active role there managing it. Now I'm going to be spending hours a week doing it. Heck no, not at all. I even have a partnership with the guys that buy and sell raw land. I'm just the financer. They're the, you know, I'm 70% owner. They're 30% and they do all the work. But still, I go in and check that portal probably at least once a week, you know, just to see how things are going.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll even do a call with them a couple times a year just to see, you know, any updates, what's going on, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but again, it's not like every single week I'm doing stuff. And even with my rentals, I have some rentals that I keep forgetting we get paid on them because there's just no drama. As opposed to rentals we just sold, like in Alabama, had a bad property manager, and then we had to step in and pretty much kick him in the butt. And again, it wasn't like I spent hours and hours every week, but we probably spent recently, you know, an hour to 2 hours a week for about a month trying to get it out of their control and get it sold, right? So in the general relative scheme of things, is it, you know, more passive than most things that people make money at? Absolutely. But don't ever think for one minute that you don't do anything, that you can just turn your brain off and do nothing. Anything that you ignore will leave you. If you ignore your spouse, that spouse will leave you. You ignore your kids, they'll leave you. You ignore your health, it'll leave you. You ignore your teeth, they'll leave you. And if you ignore your money, it'll leave you too. And so you got to find that right balance of stewardship and management versus just actively being, you know, in the daily grind. There's a big difference.
There's a really good chance I steal that from you. I love that.
Ignore you, lose it.
Yeah, I love that. That's 100% true. I couldn't agree with you more. You do this thing called infinite banking. Can you teach us what that is?
Yeah, it's actually something I didn't learn until I got into the real estate investing game. Funny enough, as a financial advisor, never heard of it at all.
Of course.
Probably because I was always taught that whole life insurance is the crappiest waste of money ever.
Yes.
So I was always telling people, don't buy whole life. It's a waste of money. You make 1 or 2% a year. It's a lame, you know, it's not even, it can't even keep up with inflation. So why buy it? Well, then I'm hearing all these real estate investors buying whole life insurance and using that as like their savings account, their tax-free savings account with the cash value to then use it for, you know, in their case, back then they were doing it to like buy cars or maybe buy some of their properties and stuff. And I was like, wait, what? Why would you do that? Now, there's a difference. Infinite banking, it's really creating your own supercharged tax-free savings account where, if done right, and that's a big caveat right there, if done right, can actually get your money to pay you twice. That's the big thing it can do. You can actually get your investment money to pay you in two different places at the same time. So here's how it works. So whole life insurance, there's the death benefit. We're not even talking about that. Yeah, it has a death benefit. It's the tax-free savings account that it has here. And by the way, Universal Life doesn't do a great job of this because there's a lot of variables there that don't quite work out as well. Whole life is boring, pays about 5 or 6% tax-free. Even net after fees, if it's done right, you can still probably average at least 4 to 5% tax-free in these things. Now, by itself, you won't get financially free. That's one thing I tell people is that by itself, it won't get you free. And you don't need it to become financially free. You don't need it to invest with. I mean, you can invest with passive income without the life insurance and still get to your goals. I mean, we have clients doing it sometimes, especially when they're older, they're doing it without the life insurance. But when they're synergized together, when they work together, you get to both places faster. Because when they work together, you actually get faster acceleration of your money. Here's how. So that cash value, that tax-free savings account you have there that's paying you more than 0.0% at the bank, well, you can get a line of credit against it with the insurance company. Doesn't show up on your credit, doesn't affect your credit at all, and there's no minimum monthly payments. It charges interest, but you pay it back however, whenever you want. The deadline is your death. So even if you don't pay it back at all, they'll just take it out of your death benefit and then pay the rest of your family tax-free, right? But it is like a Roth IRA that it grows tax-free, comes out tax-free when you do it right. And the nice thing is that there's no dumb penalties, stupid limits or rules. 59 and a half rule doesn't exist there. You can access it the way we do it from day one. It also allows you to put in as much as you want. So there's no income limitation where it says you make too much money. Sorry, you can't do it this way. We'll have to figure out how to do a backdoor Roth. None of that stupid, you know, crazy stuff. It's really, you could pay into 25% of your stated gross annual income. So if someone,
it's not an after-tax income. But the IRS usually has a rule that says pay me now or pay me later. So how does this get around that?
Well, it's like a Roth. So you pay with after-tax dollars, right? So you do pay, you pay with with the after-tax dollars you're putting in, but then like a Roth, it grows tax-free and then comes out tax-free. And it has to stay within certain guidelines and limitations. There are some things. So like, for example, the more money you put in, the bigger the death benefit has to be. We actually reverse engineer it. We figure out what's the minimum death benefit needed to allow X amount of dollars to go in each and every year. That's how we're able to minimize the cost so that you can maximize your gains. So that's the one big difference. By the way, when I bought my first whole life policy from an insurance agent, I took his word for it that he was doing it the right way. 2 years I put money in, zero cash. Remember, I said you can have cash in there from day one. I asked him if I could. He said no. He says, if you do that, you'll get taxed. Huh. Well, I found out later, he lied. And I confronted him on it. I actually kept my insurance license through all those years. I've had it now for 21 years. Wow. I actually ran numbers and I showed him. I said, apples to apples, I can beat your numbers. And even I can even give them the same death benefit, because that was his argument. Well, you should have a bigger death benefit. Fine. I'll play that dumb game with you. And even then, I still beat his numbers. And I said, what else you got? He's like, Chris, I did that because I couldn't afford to cut my commissions. That's why I did it that way. I said, there's the truth, and you're never getting a referral from me again. You suck.
Right.
You know. By the way, he's not in the business anymore. He now works for a big bank that we all love and hate, you know.
Got it.
But that's the thing. So here's the real magic, though, behind it, because it's not about the death benefit, even though that's a great bonus. The big thing is this, is that I can get a line of credit from the insurance company at a low interest rate while they pay me on all my money. So say you have $100,000 in there, and instead of just withdrawing the money out, is when you withdraw the money out, just like you do out of a savings account, when you take the money out of that savings account, it's not earning interest in that savings account anymore, is it?
That's right.
That's no different than life insurance if you just pull the money out. But if you get a line of credit where the insurance company gives you their money, your money is just used as collateral so that they know that it's safe. They'll lock up your money in there, but they're still paying you tax-free compounding interest. So they're still paying you your 5 or 6% tax-free dividends, and you're taking out this low interest rate, which means even net, especially when you use that money to invest, now you're not only making money with the investment, but also as you're taking that cash flow, the returns from the investment to pay down that line of credit to then go do it again and invest again, just like you would with a savings account. Guess what happens? They end up paying you more net interest than what you paid them. So you make a net profit on the money that you borrowed from them, and you're making money in the investment at the same time. So you actually double dip. You make money in two places at once. which when you do that, when you're trying to get out of the rat race and try to create passive income, it can actually help you get out of the rat race faster because that money is now working harder for you. You're making extra interest on the side while still doing your normal investments anyways. I just showed an example.
Chris, why doesn't everybody do this? That's the question I'm sure you get all the time, right?
One, I mean, it's a concept. Most of the time, insurance agents aren't investors, right? They never come from an investment perspective like I do. I'm an investment investor first and foremost. That's the biggest thing. They're always talking to you about someday down the road, supplemental retirement, quote unquote, right? That's what they usually will sell you on. That's great and all. And that's still an option with our option here. But it's usually this. They sell you on that. But either one, they don't know about this. The insurance agents don't know about this. Or two, even the very few percentage that do know about it, and if they're even willing to do it because it cuts their commissions back, they usually won't cut back their commissions as much as they should. I know a guy that's popular on YouTube that talks about this all the time. Great guy. But I see his policies all the time. His costs are double what they should be. Now, he'll try to tell you like, oh, this is the way it should be. This is the perfect blend of how much cash you have. He'll say things like, you know, you should have 60% of your cash in year one, you know, that you put in. So if you put in $10,000, if you have $6,000, that's good. And that's better than the traditional whole life where you have zero. But I tell people, I was like, no, you should have at least $7,500+ in there from day one, not 6,000. So you're already overpaying by at least 1,000, 2,000 bucks a year. Don't do that. You know, but again, because they want to make more money, they kind of just go somewhere in between. It's still a win for you, but it's a win for us too. And that's the biggest thing. So again, insurance companies won't teach it. Insurance agents, even if they happen to know about it or learn about it, they don't want to do it because it cuts their commissions back, because that's the only way they make money, where we make money from our investments first and foremost. And then this is just kind of icing the cake. In fact, this is the very thing that got me out of retirement after 2016, because there's another podcaster just like you. He's like, you know what? You taught me this. I'm putting in $500,000 a year into it. He was a pretty big time investor that way. And he's like, we got to get everybody doing this stuff. What can I do to get you doing this? I'm like, dude, I'm retired. I'm fine. You know, I got somebody to refer you to. He's like, yeah, but that guy's, he's okay, but he's not great. And I found out later I could actually do it better than the guy I was referring him to. Wow. So my guy even like overpaid like $50,000 a year more than he should have, you know? So that's why I get so pissed off, because insurance agents just don't want to do it, you know? And that's why it gets a bad rap. That's why Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman rip on it, because most insurance agents sell you the traditional crap, not even infinite banking, traditional stuff. That's super expensive. It's a waste of money. And I would agree with them. Even the people that are infinite bankers though, they can never agree on what's the right blend, because they won't give you the best, right? Where we always make sure we always give you the best. They don't always do that. And so critics can still criticize it. And when you do it right though, man, like if you just cut back all those insurance costs as low as you can possibly go while keeping it tax-free, it's amazing how much of a no-brainer this really becomes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard it talked about in various different ways, and I really like the way you put it. I mean, you make it seem simple, because frankly, you know, you're talking about an insurance product, then you're talking about an investment product, and it's tax-free, and people start to glaze over unless they kind of really know what you're talking about. So you made it nice and simple so people can really understand it. So that's a benefit, and kudos to you for doing that, because that helps a lot. I mean, you and I are both about financial education, right? We need to learn more about finances. We're not taught it in school. Our parents, and you know, in your case, and quite a bit in my case, didn't really kind of have a handle on money. And that put us at a bit of a disadvantage until we figured out that I use it every day. I might as well learn about it, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Listen, where can people go to find out more about you, listen more about you, get involved in infinite banking, all that kind of stuff? I want to help you out here. You've taken some good time to teach us all about this. So how can we do this?
Two different ways. One, you can go to our website, moneyripples.com. I know we're really original with the title there. or you can find our Money Ripples podcast that you can also find on YouTube or iTunes or whatever. Even all of our social media handles are all at Money Ripples, because that's how complex we are.
I love it. You like to keep things simple. That's it. That's great.
I love it.
Well, listen, what did I not ask you that I should have asked you? And that would just be an epiphany. I'm putting pressure on you. Be an epiphany for people listening.
You know, I want to go back to something you mentioned before, like diversification, because I know you do this too, from what I've researched about you and your methods and such. Like people ask me, they're like, what about this asset class or this, right? And you know, what do I do with passive income? And what point do I bring in like crypto and all this other kind of stuff too? And I just tell people like, you know, everybody has a different phase. Like if someone only has a couple $100,000, like, no, don't even worry about the crypto right now. Like, sure, you can go dabble with it, play with it, but wait till you like start to get some real money. And then you really want to start diversifying more and more. So it's almost like the bigger the money you get, the more we start talking more about diversification. But the one place you definitely aren't diversified is anything with a financial advisor. You go into mutual funds, it's all one asset class, which is paper assets. And even bonds. I mean, we've seen people lose money on bonds and they've also lost because it's still one asset class. You're never really diversified in those places. But when you talk about like what you're doing there, Mark, like where you have all these different asset classes, truly different asset classes that you have people do, that to me, that's smart. Like that's how you can ensure that you not only kind of protect yourself, but you actually have a bigger potential for an upside as well.
Remember that what Chris is saying, it's diversify among asset classes and concentrate within asset classes, just like he's been talking about. And like, you know, I talk about every week on this podcast. Well, listen, Chris, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to educate us about infinite banking and kind of sync up on some of the philosophies that we have about the financial business. So I want to thank you for your time and your wisdom. And everybody else, thank you for being here. Thank you for your time. I mean, remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. See you next time, everybody.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yagi. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.